everyone joining today, and thank you for tuning in. I'm Dr. Lara Garibe, a research fellow here at the University of Ottawa Heart Institute. I'm your host for today's episode of Beats Research Radio, a YouTube channel and podcast produced by the Bioengineering and Therapeutic Solutions Lab at the Ottawa Heart Institute. Our goal at Beats Research Radio is to communicate science to the community. Our special guest today is Dr. Hanadi Sleiman. Dr. Sleiman is a professor in the Department of Chemistry at McGill University and Canada Research Chair in DNA Nanoscience. She received her PhD from Stanford University and was a CNRS postdoctoral fellow in Professor Jean-Marie Len Laboratory at the University Louis Pasteur. Her research group focuses on using the molecule DNA as a template to assemble nanostructured materials. Dr. Sleiman has been recognized and awarded for her work over the years. Most recently, she was the recipient of the 2021 Natural Sciences and Engineering Research Council of Canada, John C. Polanyi Award, recognizing her groundbreaking advancement in the field of DNA nanotechnology and precision medicine to combat major diseases. We at Beats Research Radio are delighted to host Dr. Sleiman today. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Lara.
The pleasure is ours. We like to always start by asking our guests about the career journey that contributed to setting them onto the path where they are today. You started your education at the American University of Beirut, Lebanon. Can you tell us a little bit about your academic journey and some of the challenges you have faced?
Yeah, so I started my education, as you said, at the American University of Beirut, or what we call AUB. Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the biggest challenges is it was during the Lebanese Civil War. This is a war that extended for 15 years from 1975 to 1990. And so, to say the least, it was a very difficult time for everyone in Beirut at the time. Studying was basically punctuated by explosions and street fighting and snipers and corruption for all of us in Beirut at the time. But I was also really blessed with a very, very loving and engaged family. And I just got a lot of motivation from them to work hard. Also motivation to get out of Lebanon, to be honest, because of how bad the situation was. So tried very hard to get into the grad place of my choice, which is when I joined Stanford for my PhD. And then I guess from there, I did 5 years of my PhD at Stanford, actually in inorganic organometallic chemistry. So very different from what we do right now. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I joined the lab, as you said, of Jean-Marie Len, who got the Nobel Prize in 1987 for, basically putting together a field called supramolecular chemistry, which absolutely fascinated me. And after that, I started my career at McGill around 1999, and I've been there since. So it's been a wonderful place to work. I'm so glad I made that choice. Very, very collegial, very supportive environment. But I mean, you're asking about challenges. Of course, you know, the big challenge for being a professor is to juggle all of the things that we have to do, especially, of course, if you have a family and two professional parents. So juggling family and writing grants and writing papers and having a large group. If I had to do it all over again, I would actually do the same exact thing. It's such a fun and a wonderful experience. I just, really I'm in my element here. So challenging, but very, very rewarding too.
Nice. It's very inspiring to hear experiences of such accomplished people like yourself. I'm sure it really gives motivation for young people to pursue careers and to follow similar paths.
Thank you.
Now let's talk a little bit about your research. Can you tell us what is synthetic DNA exactly and how is it related to nanotechnology?
Yeah, so we're used to nucleic acids, DNA and RNA as the biomolecules of life, right? Involved in storing and translating our genetic information. But we also now can synthesize DNA and RNA chemically. We can synthesize it chemically in the lab, and we can make it enzymatically in test tubes. And from this knowledge and from these discoveries, there have been revolutions actually all the way from fields of molecular biology to diagnostics. So nucleic acids, synthetic nucleic acids, have permeated basically a lot of biology and chemistry. And one of the new things that nucleic acids now are doing that is fantastic is therapeutics, right? Mm-hmm. So we're witnessing really, as we saw with the COVID vaccine, a revolution in therapy, because we are used to small molecules as therapeutics, as drugs. Then we had the coming of proteins, right? Antibodies as drugs. Mm-hmm. And now we really have a new class that is again going to revolutionize medicine, which is nucleic acid therapeutics. Mm-hmm. And what's really cool about them is that they can go to the source, right? They can actually silence gene expression at the RNA level. They can even edit the genome, right? They can, mm-hmm. Use the cell machinery to make proteins. I mean, you know, the possibilities are limitless. And as we also saw with the mRNA vaccine, they're very short to develop. Like the drug development phase is not very long. So they're fantastic, right? Synthetic DNA and RNA. But the problem is that we're still really have a lot of challenges before they can reach the clinic. So 2018, we saw the first siRNA therapy being basically FDA approved. And a few of them actually have come online as well, and some on clinical trials. So really, the field is opening up, but we still have big challenges in the delivery of nucleic acids. So even the best lipid nanoparticles that are now used, let's say for therapies or mRNA vaccines, mm-hmm. are basically limited, because they deliver a very tiny fraction of the nucleic acid into the cell cytosol, so that it is active, very small fraction. So that's one problem. The other thing is that if you want to use them for things other than vaccines, you need them to be delivered to other target organs. And so far, we've been good at delivering nucleic acids to the liver, mm-hmm. Clearing it very quickly from the kidneys. But mm-hmm. siRNA drugs have been approved for the liver diseases. But for the other organs, it's been really quite a challenge still. Mm-hmm. So we need to really overcome these challenges. So where does DNA nanotechnology come in here? So our group, what we would like to do basically is we would like to take RNA and DNA therapeutics and package them into larger, what we're going to call DNA nanostructures. So use the actual therapy, but package it into something larger. And the reason why we want to do this is this, we think, is going to improve their delivery and address some of these really, really big challenges in the field. So over the years, we've made DNA cages, prisms, cubes, we name it. We've made DNA nanotubes, spheres, rods. And what's really cool about DNA is that it's really like a molecular Lego. It is so programmable as a molecule that you can make all of these with high, high precision. And mm-hmm. it turns out that that's very important for drug delivery, because the size and the shape of a drug delivery vehicle is what is responsible for its biological activity and, of course, the presentation of molecules. And so controlling this is crucial, actually, for drug delivery. So over the years, we discovered also biologically that packaging these nucleic acid therapeutics into our cages and our spheres, et cetera, can really enhance their potencies and their selectivity. So we can go into detail on that. But basically, that's why we want to use DNA nanotechnology, in order to kind of overcome some of these problems with nucleic mm-hmm. acid delivery.
That's pretty interesting. Now that you gave us a bit of a definition on like synthetic DNA and nanotechnology, so how does your research bridge the field of biomaterials to therapeutic treatments to more directly affect patients' disease outcomes?
Right. So what I may do, I mean, since we, time's limited, I'll give you a couple of examples from the lab. So let me give you some examples on cancer. So we're specifically interested in precision oncology. So basically where what we're going to do is, because we have nucleic acid therapies, right, we have DNA and RNA therapies, we can actually target the genetic mutations that are at the root of cancer. And that's really cool because, you know, again, you're kind of going backwards from proteins to the source, and you are targeting with high specificity. So to just give you an example, we created a DNA cage, and and within the cage, we encapsulated an siRNA molecule. So an RNA molecule that silences gene expression. This siRNA molecule is completely inactive inside the cage, but if this molecule goes in contact with a gene product that is only present in prostate cancer cells, the cage opens and releases the cargo. So the cargo is not released, and the structure is completely inactive in normal cells. But when it goes into cancer cells and finds this specific gene fusion, it's basically a gene fusion product that's only in cancer cells. If it finds that, it actually releases the cargo and delivers. So it's conditional delivery, and that's what these structures can give you. So that's one of the examples in terms of delivery. The other thing that we're really interested is direct gene silencing of important genes. So as you know, there's a lot of proteins that drive cancer. But unfortunately, like if you want to think about small molecules, drugs that might actually address these proteins, most of these protein cancer drivers cannot be targeted easily by small molecules. Very difficult. They're unstructured, or they have problems, et cetera. So we don't have actually for most cancers, we don't have small molecule targeted therapies. But as we said, nucleic acids then can go one step back and say, okay, let's target now the RNA that gave rise to this protein. And so importantly, we have to really increase the efficiency of these. So what we found is that we recently discovered that by taking some of our spherical nucleic acids and attaching these siRNA therapies to them and testing these in terms of their ability for gene silencing, that we are increasing the gene silencing efficacy. So regular RNA therapies, then ours inside our spheres, they're better. Why are they better? We're interested in the biology of this. Why is it that our structures can enter cells better or differently? What is the receptor responsible? So we're really interested in this. And on the other hand as well, we're collaborating with one of the big pharmaceutical companies that is actually responsible for some of these drugs that are on the market right now to improve the therapy, their therapies. So they're trying to take their therapies and putting them in our spheres to see if we can actually improve their efficacy. So those are two examples. I don't know if we can talk about other examples in the lab, but we're also working on immunotherapies. And for us, that's really interesting because some of our molecules also have been shown to kind of turn cancer immune environment from what you call immune cold to immune hot. In other words, by giving our molecules basically to the cancer environment in vivo, what happens is that they're more responsive to immunotherapies than other tumors. So that is also something that we really would like to explore. So those are some of the applications that we're looking into.
Well, the conclusion that we can draw from your explanation is that the application of this technology is basically limitless. And can be expanded in so many different ways.
Absolutely.
So in a wider context, your research can also contribute to other fields beyond medicine and cancer, as you just stated. Can you tell us how DNA nanomaterial technology fits in other sectors of research and development?
So our research and other research, so not just ours, we have now seen applications of DNA nanotechnology in diagnostics, really important applications in molecular diagnostics, particularly for problems like, oh, I want to detect a very small quantity of something, but I can't use PCR because I'm in an environment, let's say, in a third world country where I don't have access to PCR, things like this. So diagnostics, but also material science. So there's a lot of applications in soft robotics, a lot of applications in photonics, electronics, even computer science. So the field is very broad now, and then there's it attracts people from so many different fields into this place where they all use DNA as a Lego, if you want, but they actually are going into applications for both biology and material science. In our lab, we've actually also created hydrogels for soft robotics, DNA hydrogels for soft robotics, and for tissue regeneration, so other biomaterials applications. So yeah, the field is just a new field, a very exciting field to work in, really.
And it's exciting too, because there's not a lot of studies that have been done in that field. So again, we go back, it's limitless, and it can be expanded in so many directions.
Absolutely, absolutely.
I really enjoyed our conversation. And before we conclude our interview today, what are words of wisdom that you would like to provide to others who are interested in the area that you have pursued? And more specifically, young women interested in science.
All right. First of all, I would really, as I said, really encourage young scientists to participate in DNA nanotechnology. There's so many places that you can be in. You can be a biologist in this field, a biophysicist. You can be, like I said, a material scientist. You know, you can come in from any place, and you can be a chemist. There's a lot of beautiful chemistry to discover there too. So I really highly encourage people to join this field. In terms of what I would suggest for people in you know, young scientists to do, I really think that what has pushed me is curiosity, and what has also pushed me is not being afraid to jump into areas that are completely out of my comfort zone. So as I said, I started as an organometallic chemist, and now we're doing cancer therapy. And on the way, of course, it's very intimidating. You have to learn so much, and you have to kind of sound like you know what you're talking about, right? You know, exactly. But that's the beauty of science, is that, you know, every day you can read and learn something new and apply it. And then every day you can talk to new people and start collaboration. So really jump into fields. Don't stay with your supervisor's work. Jump into new fields. Don't be afraid. You'll land standing up, I'm pretty sure. So that would be my big advice. There's a lot more I can say, but that would be my big one.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your experience with us. This concludes our interview. Once again, I'd like to thank our guest for her special appearance on Beats Research Radio, and for her informative and fascinating talk regarding her science journey. Thank you, Dr. Sleiman, for joining.
Thank you so much, Lara.
On behalf of the whole Beats Research Radio team, thank you all for tuning in. And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Beats Research Radio, and podcast. And we'll see you again with another Science for the Community episode. Until then, stay safe.